everyone, and welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor. And today we're going to be talking through some stuff with the Open at Belton that just went down, looking ahead to Texas. I almost just called it Texas Trivia. That said Trevor's Trivia on my list. Nice. Texas States. And also, I have a scenario, not for Make That Call, but before then, that I'm going to put you in, Trevor, just because I want to get your opinion on a few things. So,
nice.
Should be a very interesting show. But let's start it off with the Open at Belton.
How about it?
This tournament kind of transported us back a little bit.
It really did.
It took us back in time to yet another classic Ricky and Paul battle.
Mm-hmm.
Something that, not that we haven't seen in a while, but we used to see a lot more frequently than we see right now.
Pretty much every event.
Yeah. It basically came down to the final two holes. Ricky had to shoot a pretty ridiculous 16 under par out there to win by two strokes over Paul. But one thing that was interesting here is Paul and Ricky ended up over 10 strokes clear of the field. I believe Paul was 11, Ricky was 13 clear of third. And another interesting fact, neither of them had a bogey out there all tournament. The course did play pretty soft. The course's par was pretty soft, but still pretty crazy.
That's really crazy.
To go six rounds combined, so 3 and 3, no bogeys at all.
Yeah.
So now, Rick, with this Ricky and Paul rivalry, obviously it used to be a bigger thing. Nowadays, there's a lot more talent that kind of seeps in between them. But Ricky recently did an interview with another podcast here on the Foundation Podcast Network, the Nick and Matt Show, which if you haven't listened to the full episode, I highly recommend you go do that and listen to the interview with Rick. But he said in there, obviously, we're trying to beat the field, but most of the time it turns into a me versus Paul battle. When me or Paul are one stroke off the lead and six strokes ahead of third, good luck catching us. If he's playing at a high level and I'm playing at a high level, we're going to be right there. And it doesn't matter who's playing in the tournament. So, first talking point from the MPO side, Open at Belton. Is that really still the case? If Ricky and Paul both show up, both play great golf, is anyone able to be in contention with them?
You know, I'd like to argue that that is still the case. And this is why I do think that there are more players out there that are just about as talented. And like, a guy like Eagle McMahon or Calvin Heimberg. Calvin's close.
Calvin was at this event. Eagle's not.
I'm saying Calvin is close to bridging that gap between them, because I think guys like Eagle is like one of the better examples, who are like, I think, as arm talented as those two players. He is capable of popping off for those like 15, 16 under rounds, but he is more likely to do that like once during a tournament or maybe twice. Whereas Paul and Ricky, if their game is on, they can do it three times in a row, no problem. It's just not even an issue. And those are the two guys that we've really seen that have been the ones who can do that. Calvin, I think, is close to that. I think Calvin is the other guy I've seen that's been like super consistent. But I agree, like, if Ricky and Paul are playing their best golf, nobody's beating them. No way.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you. I think that we're still in that era where if they show up and play their best golf, if they are both at a tournament and one of them's playing their best golf, they won that event. Whoever played their best golf out of those two. But I will say that I think why we're not going to see, and we haven't seen, the similar dominance is it requires their best golf now.
Right.
If you look back at 2015, 2016, 2017, even 2014, all the way back to like 2013 or 2012 when it first kind of started. But 2014 to, I would say, like 2018, 2019 is like the key Ricky versus Paul. I don't think it required their absolute best every weekend for them to be 1 and 2.
Good point.
I think that especially like 2015, Paul, there's no way that he played at his absolute best all those wins.
Yeah.
He was just that much better than the field.
Mm-hmm.
To where he didn't, when Paul had his absolute dominant season in 2015, he didn't have to play his absolute best.
Yeah.
He was just that good. And then similar things with Ricky in like 2016, 2017. You know, that's when I think the Ricky and Paul battle really got heated. I think might have been 2016, one of those 2 years, if they were both in an event, one of them won.
Yeah.
Every time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a similar thing that we saw there, where Ricky didn't have to play his best golf to win.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I think where it's shifted is they do have to play their best golf.
Yeah.
I agree with what he's saying. If they both show up and they both play pretty much their best golf, which this weekend they both played pretty freaking good. Like, it wasn't like Ricky beat Paul because Paul didn't play good. Paul shot a 13 down the final round.
Yeah,
it required a ridiculous round out of Ricky to beat him.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think that's kind of how, if you're Ricky or Paul, that's the version of the other person you want to beat.
Right.
You want to beat them at their best.
Right.
But it requires them to be at their best, I think, to separate them from the field. If they play decent golf or good golf, they're not going to win. That's where you might see them even slipping down into like eighth, ninth place this year, which is kind of crazy. So I think we're going to see a little bit more parity, but I do agree that if they both show up, they could still be dominant.
The field, the field has gotten there to the point where if they slip up a little bit, like they're going to get caught, like you said. But yeah, it's getting there, but it's just the consistency that with what they can do. Like when you see a guy like go off for, you know, when the first round goes by and I see a hot round from somebody, unless it's Paul or Ricky, I'm not considering them. Here they go. Like here they are. They're off the races. They're going to win. Like I'm not even thinking about them in that last round yet, because I know that they might follow it up with something 10 strokes.
Well, that's the thing too, is like, if you're looking at, we can go back to Waco, right? Yeah. If you're looking at Waco and you saw Nico, Kale, Bradley Williams up there, I vividly remember saying in the podcast, like, well, Ricky's not out of this. He's four strokes back. Ricky and Paul are pretty much the only players that I'm looking at. And if I see them within five strokes going to the final round, you don't count them out. If you see some other players, it depends on who they're within five strokes of. But a lot, there's several other players that if they're within five strokes, it's going to take a pretty big feat. Yeah. Ricky and Paul have done it so much that if they're within striking distance, they're going
to
strike.
I think with the hot round thing too, it comes down to like literally composure. Some guys, you know, pop off 14 under, they're in the lead. And even if they're a slightly bigger name player, they're like, oh my gosh, like they're, you know, I went hot, I'm on the lead card, like I did it. And then it kind of, you know, it puts some pressure on you. You know, you're going to be filmed the next day on that feature card, you know, especially if you're not somebody who's a mainstayer on the feature cards. It'll really put the pressure on you. Whereas Paul and Ricky, you know, they expect that from themselves. So when that happens,
they're filmed pretty much every round they ever play.
Right. So when that happens, that was just them executing their game plan. It didn't have, it wasn't a surprise. Yeah. So that, I think composure is a big part of that.
Now, one thing that I wanted to ask as well is, I actually had it formulated and just completely forgot it. So I'm going to go with a different question because I didn't write this question down, but if you're going into a tournament and you have Paul and Ricky, okay, if you're able to have them both be completely on, they're both on fire, who's taking it down?
I think that's almost like one of those scenarios where you've got two basketball teams that are just on money and it's like last one with the ball wins. It's kind of that thing. Like somebody's going to get a break the other one doesn't get, and that's kind of just going to be what determines it. Like neither one's really going to make a big mistake. It's just going to kind of be a coin toss. I don't think it's like, I think when they're both at their very best, both of them play pretty much perfect golf. And when there's perfect golf, the only thing that's going to change that is that little wind gust or that tiny branch or that chain
the
out.
Break they get.
So, because when they're so close to each other, you can look back at their rounds and find the two strokes in a chain out or something. Like, there's no real way to decide that. They're too close.
Another thing, too, that I think is interesting with this whole dynamic is before we've talked about the dominance of one player, right? The Tiger Woods era, the Paige Pierce era, even the Paul McBeth era. We've talked about how there's pros and cons to that, right? Having one player dominate, it's very exciting. It gives you someone to root against. There's also cons to it.
Yeah.
What are the pros and cons? Because one thing we haven't really talked about is on MPO, it's really been a two horse race.
Yeah,
right,
it has.
What are the pros and cons to having two players dominate the sport? Because I feel like again, this era is not quite over, but it's coming to an end of the Paul and Ricky dominating back and forth. Who's going to win?
Yeah,
people are probably still picking them in their top three or top five more than anyone else.
Sure,
but every weekend, I don't think we're going to see Paul Ricky win. I think it's going to be some other people sneaking up there. So, what are the kind of the pros and cons do you think of having that type of rivalry at the top?
Well, I don't really see any cons, really. I mean, and the only reason we really talked about the Paul McBeth era and not the Paul versus Ricky era as much is because Paul is the one winning the world titles for most of the stretch.
Yeah.
And that's one event out of the year. Now, he did win the majority of the events in most of those years. I mean, we could look back and find the stats, but I'm sure he won most of the Ricky-Paul battles. But like when you look at like the best example I can think of off the top of my head is like Magic and Bird in the NBA. Like the NBA was not popular. Those two guys were what drove it to popularity before MJ came in. So it was like a two-person rivalry is what started the success of that league. You know, at the end of the day, whenever like players are being dominant to like drive the popularity of a league, it's just like they're making the league more popular because it's exciting to watch and because they get a lot of fans. People latch onto them. So I think it's almost even better when you have two people. That could be argued either way. Like, we've never, like, in ball golf with the whole Tiger Woods era, you know, he's very much, you know, given the credit of being the guy who, like, made ball golf to that next level of popularity because everybody rooted for the Tiger. We don't really know what that would look like if it was Tiger and another guy like that.
Well, Phil was kind of, I don't know a ton about golf.
Yeah, no, Phil was.
I just know whenever
Phil was very successful Phil's during that era, yeah. And there were years where they were kind of neck and neck, but not really.
Not
it was
same
still
level.
It was still the Tiger Woods era. Especially when you talk about major championships, Tiger won way more. So in disc golf, it's tough to say if there are any cons to that or which one would be better. But I think a two horse race is great because you're going to get fans on either side. It creates debate and intense rivalries amongst not only the players themselves, but the fans, you know, rooting for their respective players. But yeah, I don't think there's really a problem with either one, but I personally, as a fan, I think having two people in it is more exciting because, like, if it's one person domination, it's exciting to see somebody playing so well, but the actual event itself might not be quite as exciting because it's not coming down to the stretch. Whereas yeah. When we have Paul and Ricky, you know, yeah, the rest of the card might be getting smoked, but at least we're going to see it get tight down to the end and have an exciting finish. So that's what I'd prefer.
Yeah, I agree. I think that having a two horse, now, first off, there's no way to control this.
No.
Like, there's no way you're picking and choosing. No. Because, I mean, even, like, with Paige's dominance, Kat's been there, too. But I agree that I think having two dominant players, two dominant figures in the sport is better simply because, this is going to sound weird, but it creates division,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense, to where division like Duke versus UNC is, whenever I hear the word rivalry, that's what I think of, right?
Yeah.
And if you're a Duke fan, your blood kind of boils towards UNC for right. no reason other than you're a Duke fan. You know what I mean? I can't stand Roy Williams, not because he's not a good coach. I'm a Duke fan. I just yeah. can't stand the guy. You yeah. know what I mean? And I think that kind of, it does the same thing to where now not only am I rooting for Duke, but I'm rooting against UNC. So it causes me as a fan to, if I'm that diehard towards Paul and Ricky,
yeah.
I'm not. I don't really know many people are. But there's going to be, as mm-hmm. the sport progresses, if people get that diehard towards Paul and Ricky, not only do you want Ricky to win, yeah. you really want Paul
You're
to
like
lose.
You're paying attention twice as much.
Exactly.
Right.
So then, the next weekend, if Ricky's not there, or Ricky's not in contention, but Paul is, you just want to make sure Paul doesn't win. You
exactly,
know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
even the NCAA tournament, I cared about the UNC, was it Wisconsin game?
Yeah.
And it gave me great pleasure to see Wisconsin slap him around.
I got smoked.
Yeah, that brought joy to my heart. You know what I mean? That weekend, I was a Wisconsin fan that game.
Well, you had to be because Duke wasn't there.
Exactly. Well, anyways, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like if Paul doesn't show up
yeah.
and you're a Paul fan and it's right. Ricky versus Calvin Heimberg.
You're going to cheer for Calvin.
Yeah, put the pizza in the oven, man. Let's do this. You know what I mean? I'm cheering for Calvin all the way. I think yeah. that's the type of thing that is great for the sport because it causes fans to really care. And then if they're both there, even people who aren't Ricky or Paul fans want to see the show.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's where even where people aren't Duke and UNC fans, they're going to watch the game.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a show. Mm-hmm. That's one thing, too, is if Ricky and Paul are both in contention, it's going to get close. It's going to get tight. That's yeah. the best part of all rivalries is you know it's going to get close. You can mm-hmm. think back to the European Open where Paul, was it like 8 strokes the final round or 6 or 7 strokes the final round on Rick, I believe it was. You knew going to the final round it's going to get close.
Yeah.
And it did. It got mm-hmm. close. I believe Paul actually won it. You know what I mean? That's one thing that I really like about this rivalry, and Rick was even talking about it in this Nick and Matt show interview, is he's like, if one of us is in contention, like if we're both within striking distance, like it's going to be a birdie fest.
Yeah.
He's like, at that point, we're not concerned about the field. Mm-hmm. We're concerned about, and he actually said, like, as much as the field probably hates it, if Paul and I are in contention, like all we're caring about is beating the other person that's in contention with us. Like yeah. when we show up and we're at the top, the course is going to get destroyed that day because yeah. they're both going to show up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I would bet that there is a handful of times maybe where you can like look it around and Ricky and Paul are neck and neck going into the final round and one of them played bad.
Yeah, it's true.
It's normally like 15 down, 13 down. Yeah. And they're both like, holy cow, like 12 down was the previous world record or previous right. course record and you just both beat it.
Right.
It's pretty impressive stuff. But I definitely think that era is coming to an end just because of the amount of talent that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky also, though, talked about, they were asking about contracts, right?
Yeah.
Contracts being public, what he thought about Paul's contract being public, which first off, I was very impressed with how Rick handled the interview with the Nick and Matt show, because there was a lot of questions kind of about Paul or about his thing, his rivalry with Paul and stuff like that. And he was very, you could tell, like, he always wanted to beat Paul, but he also had a lot of respect for what Paul had done, which I think that's another great sign of a rivalry. Mm-hmm. Is you're never going to really find, I'm always going to go back to Duke and UNC. You're never going to find a clip of Coach K really smack-talking Roy Williams or the other way around. They both respect each other because they know how hard it is to do it at their level, and someone who's doing it with them, they respect it.
Yeah.
Game respects game. But he was talking, so he was asked about the contract, and first off, you know, he did say, like, you know, I'm really happy for Paul. You know, it's a great thing, great movement, whatever. But he was talking about possibly making his next contract public as well.
Yeah.
And he said he could definitely see the benefit. But one key thing here is he said he thinks it helps future players realize their worth also. Big companies have, I guess, just taken advantage of players because they didn't know their own value.
Yeah.
So this to me is where it's really important for players to, like, have their own brand, something where they're in control of it and they can see, like, how much selling power do I have. But also, I think it's also super important to having agents.
Yeah.
Because I think what some of these players are going to be realizing is there's going to be a lot of them that are looking at their contracts and are like, hold up. Like, if they had a brand, they were selling their own stuff, whatever, they might be looking at, like, how much they can move on their own, or even be looking at someone comparable to them and how much they're moving and being like, I'm not getting paid nearly enough.
Yeah.
What also might happen is there might be some players, this is a kick in the pants, because they're like, I'm getting paid too much. Like,
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really moving plastic. You know, this is a wake-up call. But what do you think is the biggest advantage? As we progress, obviously, agents are going to end up coming into disc golf.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sport. It's going to happen. What do you think is the biggest advantage to when that happens, when agents end up coming in?
Yeah, I think it's just accountability for starters. But I think one thing that people are ignoring, everybody's talking about an agent's ability to negotiate contracts. But what really is going to change the game when agents get involved, especially agents that have experience, you know, I think it's really cool, like, that what Nate Perkins is doing, trying to represent players and help them out. But, like, I don't think Nate Perkins has experience and connections from being an agent. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, like, if you get a guy who's been, like, the guys that are really good agents that have been in other sports, they're going to generate brand opportunities for disc golfers. They're going to find them. Like, that's going to be part of their job, is to find them endorsements and things of that nature, to where it's going to, you know, by like, just, like, secondhandedly, it's going to create exposure for disc golf. You know, I think that's something that is, like, big for disc golfers, because it's going to be new income that they probably don't even know is a possibility, because they're not really looking for it and it's not coming to them. But if you have somebody working on your behalf going after it, I mean, just even just local companies, you know, like, they're willing to, like, make deals happen to, like, get people, you know, throw a guy up on a billboard or do a little commercial or whatever it could be, like that. I think that's going to be even more interesting to see when agents get involved, because, you know, it's no secret that when you have somebody, like, working on your behalf and their sole job is finding you deals, they're going to do it, or else they're not going to be your agent anymore. Yeah. But I also think accountability, I mean, the more obvious answer is definitely accountability within manufacturers. They're going to have to, these agents are going to know numbers, because that's also part of their job. They're going to know what guys are getting paid. A lot of time, what's probably going to happen is certain agents are going to become popular enough that a lot of different players are underneath them. So they're definitely going to know the numbers in that case. And manufacturers are going to have no choice but to pay up to the industry standard, which up until this point was probably pretty cheap, until the first really big public contract was just released with Paul. And now all of a sudden there is an industry standard. And, you know, good on Discraft for doing what they did, but they just set the bar very high, because, you know, if every world title is worth $2 million, you know, across 10 years or however you want to break down the math, like, let's say if every world title is worth 200 grand a year, essentially, if that's how you want to do the math, that's obviously not probably the right way to do it.
But yeah,
then, like, players are going to get a lot more expensive than they were. And if I were other certain manufacturers, especially if I were Innova, hearing Ricky say things like that, I'd be sweating, because I guarantee you Ricky is not making anywhere close to what Paul just landed with his contract. And I do think Ricky is probably worth a lot more than he's being paid. So it's going to come down to what manufacturers are willing to, you know, shell out the money, put your money where your mouth is, and then those manufacturers are gonna have to work hard to push their players' brands and create brands like stuff like the PM line to where they can earn the money back. You know, they can actually get the value out of their player other than just top finishes at events. Because at the end of the day, that's not going to create all the value.
Yeah, and Ricky had said in the interview that he was looking at having an agent with his next negotiations. Yeah. I'm not sure if he has had them in the past. Mm-hmm. But I do think one thing that you're talking about that might be somewhat overlooked is I think it's key that these agents come from outside disc golf.
Yeah.
Now, disc golf right now is in a weird spot because we're growing fast, the sport as a whole. A lot of companies within disc golf are growing fast, mm-hmm. but everyone's hiring from within disc golf.
Yeah.
Everyone across the board. Like, if you name an organization, I don't know about manufacturer side, actually. I can't speak that for 100% fact. Yeah. But if you look at how fast some of these manufacturers are growing, it's probably pretty certain that a lot of these guys, their only manufacturing job has been disc golf.
Right.
Because if you look at, like, let's just say Dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. Dynamic 10 years ago was probably the size of us, to be honest with you, just doing custom stamp stuff, and they had all brands.
Yeah.
And now 10 years later, they're obviously not manufacturing their own discs, but they're running their own full brand. A lot of those guys have probably been there since the start. They've been there since the beginning.
Yeah.
Not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying if we hire agents in that same tone of let's hire someone within disc golf, like a Nate Perkins.
Yeah.
He might be a great negotiator. He might be able to do great things within disc golf, but he's only going to know disc golf numbers.
Yeah, you know, he also doesn't have the network outside of disc golf.
But beyond that, if you bring someone in outside, from outside, and he's looking at Ricky's social media following. I'm going to just keep using Ricky. I don't know. Even Calvin Heimer. He's looking at someone's social media following, and he knows in the outside world what that following's worth.
Right, right.
And he knows in the outside world what, like, how much he can look at. Players know at the end of the day how many Tour Series discs and stuff they sold.
Yeah.
So the agent's looking at that and being like, look, how many of these did you run? Oh, you only ran 10,000 and they sold 10,000.
Yeah.
How fast did they sell out? Oh, they sold out immediately. So there's not really a cap as to what how much this player could sell disc-wise. Yeah. You know what I mean? They might be looking at it and being like, this player's worth three times what you're paying them. That players might be worth, heck, at the end of the day, they might look at, outside agent might have looked at Paul's deal and been like, you're getting underpaid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, 10 years, 10 million? Paul, like, no, that's a bad deal for you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That sounds crazy to say because it's the biggest deal we've seen. But on this flip side of that token, we've dealt very little bit with outside companies when it comes to social media stuff and social media sponsorships. The money's on a completely different scale. And I mean, we're not talking big money here, but I'm just saying when we've had these conversations, stuff that we do for disc golf companies is laughable to the outside world.
Right.
You know what I mean? The outside world money, when it comes to social media, when it comes to player sponsorship, when it comes to stuff like that, is like unfathomable for disc golfers.
Yeah.
And I think that's the type of stuff that an outside agent brings. And that's the type of perspective an outside agent brings to where, and another thing that I think an outside agent would help shift is right now, you actually made this point. I'm going to steal your thunder here, but I'm going to give you full credit. Right now in disc golf, the player is like the person who's lucky to be sponsored by manufacturer. It's viewed that way. Like, if you're a manufacturer, you look at a player almost, not all of them, and Discraft sees themselves as very lucky to have Paul. You know what I mean? And Innova probably sees themselves as lucky to have Ricky. You get too far down there, though, and I think this is part of the reason James Conrad left Innova, is if you get far enough down the line, it's almost like the company is like, well, aren't you lucky to be sponsored by us?
Yeah.
Like, you should feel so thankful that you have this opportunity to play for our team. When in all reality, these players are the ones driving these discs.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee you, if you take, let's just say, we're going to use Innova. They're the giant, right? They always have been, still are, the number one disc manufacturer. If you removed every player from Innova, okay, player-wise, and Innova was on their own to market their discs, and you took all those players still existed in the world, but now Ricky's playing for Dynamic, Calvin Heinberg's playing for Prodigy.
You scattered them.
Yeah. You scattered them out across all the brands. 5 years from now, Innova would probably be almost non-existent.
Right.
Because then day in and day out, all these players, they're all these like new players coming into the sport and everything, players, they're watching Jomez. They're watching player YouTube channels. They're watching content being put out. They're looking at pros.
Yeah.
And the pros are driving these.
Innova thrives off of brand loyalty, and a lot of that brand loyalty was created by the big surgence of players that entered in the Climo era and the big surgence of players that entered in the Macbeth era under Innova. So all those guys picked up Innova, and they stuck with them because the brand loyalty is very strong in disc golf. But the second you lose the players that create that loyalty, you might hold on. You might hold on to some guys that still keep throwing it, but the new players are not going to pick you up.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to hurt you down.
Well, it's also, we've seen, I mean, I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast knows of players, and you might be a player yourself, that has way more discraft in their bag than ever before.
It's crazy.
I mean, beforehand, if I walked out on the course, I saw a buzz. I would occasionally see a heat and some forces, maybe. Zones were popular.
Mostly Innova, though.
But that was kind of it. And they were never in the same bag. I never saw a force, buzz, zone, and heat in the same bag. I would see like a guy throwing a heat, and then the rest of his bag was Innova. You know what I mean? And then the second Paul made that switch, around here at least, it might be because Paul lives here, I see Discraft 2-1 that I see Innova.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's like I see a Rock 3 here, a Firebird there, a Destroyer here. I know that's not true across the country. But I do know, I would say this with a fact across the country, is if you go to your local course, you're probably seeing 2 to 3 times the amount of discraft that you saw previously.
Yeah.
And that's not a fluke.
No, it's because a new guy enters the sport, he watches Paul Macbeth on YouTube, and he throws discraft, so I want
to
throw discraft.
And it's not only necessarily like they're going to Paul because Paul's play or anything. Discraft not only took Paul, right? So they got Paul, they signed him, then they actually marketed Paul.
Right.
So Paul's popularity with Discraft, I would say, is exponentially larger than when it was with Innova.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply good on Discraft because Discraft really marketing Paul as a player and Paul's brand, the PM line. Discraft literally created the PM brand and marketed it. Ricky is creating his own brand, Saki Bomb. Mm-hmm. He's doing all the marketing. When do you ever see Innova pushing Saki Bomb?
Never, yeah.
But yeah.
They've never had a collaboration line.
No, they don't do it. I mean, it's the same thing with Nate Sexton and his like NS logo.
Yeah.
You see Sexton promoting that, Sexton pushing it. You don't really see them pushing it. I think that's going to be something that, as the sport grows, is going to bite Innova in the butt a little bit.
Yeah, I think manufacturers have to all realize at some point that the players are what push your brand. It is that simple.
And
I mean,
the second whatever company, and honestly, it seems like it's Discraft right now, realizes we're lucky to have these players. Like, we are so lucky to have Paul and Paige. We're going to do whatever we can to keep Paul and Paige, and we're going to do whatever we can to keep them happy.
Right.
Then those are going to be the companies that start to take over.
Yeah, because other guys are going to want to go there.
Yeah, if you're looking at a player and you're like, well, aren't you lucky that you throw Prodigy? Which I'm telling just you, throwing out random brands.
There is like this very interesting domino effect that could start where if players get more and more expensive and a company like Discraft just keeps dominating the market like they've been with Paul and they're able to afford that next big contract and just pay with it because they can move plastic. Like, it could happen to where Discraft, they're in the position to do it now, could just slowly start absorbing every single player because they're the only ones who can afford it. And, like, they could monopolize disc golf. Because
even Ezra now, Ezra's brand has gotten, like, we got Ezra Tour Series discs in, and they were Ezra and Yulee's. We didn't have Paul or Paige's. Ezra and Yulee's, first one off the shelves, like, immediately. And part of it is, because they've been invested, their brand's been growing. It's been invested from Discraft. Ezra's even from OTB, and Ezra with his YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And Yulee from Discraft, obviously Jomez, Ledgestone. They're building their own personal brands, and it's doing that with the help of a company supporting them behind them. Mm-hmm. Company's marketing department and stuff like that. That type of stuff in a contract is invaluable.
Yeah.
Because now, like, Ezra could finish at the Belton, open at Belton. I don't even know where he finished, but I'm pretty sure it was pretty low.
It wasn't great.
And you know what? If we got Ezra Nukes in on the shelf tomorrow,
be gone.
They're gone tomorrow.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So right quickly before we jump into the next topic of FPO, the Open at Belton, I just want to ask, when agents are coming into the sport, do you see any disadvantages to an agent coming in?
Well, my only fear with the large contracts is that it could bankrupt the sport in a sense, because I do wonder, like, with Paul with this $10 million deal, and like, if that's what outside agents, if they come in and like, that's their scale, cause that's what they know. And they're not super familiar with how financials and disc golf work to know that that's an unheard of deal. Then like, I just hope the manufacturers don't bite off more than they can chew. Or else we could see companies go under because they're going to promise players money thinking we have to do this. I think manufacturers, seeing what is happening with Paul, they're going to start taking risks. They're going to start throwing out big contracts to guys, like when, if Ricky were to go back on the market or whatever it might be, thinking, you know, we're going to offer him this. We don't really have the money, but we think we can make it back because of the signing. And if it doesn't pay off, then we could see some trouble. So that's the only thing I wonder, is if manufacturers are going to get ahead of themselves, because agents aren't really going to understand, you know, how the disc golf economy works. But other than that, I mean, and I don't even really think it's a real issue, because I think there'll always be somebody around to pick up the slack and to buy somebody out and to absorb somebody. Like, there's always going to be an entity selling plastic. So I don't really think that's an issue. You know, companies, as years go on and as the sport gets more popular, are going to, some of them will, you know, die, some of them will get absorbed, and some of them are just going to explode, and that's just going to be how it is. That's business.
Yeah.
So I'm all for it. I don't really think there's actually a con that could be devastating to the sport.
Yeah, I don't think there's a con that could be devastating. I think the only when I wrote this question, the only disadvantage I could think of was more to the lower level of the paid teams, if that makes sense. So like your lower level of Discraft's tour team, your lower level of like Prodigy's core team or whatever they call them.
Yeah.
These pros who are right now making some money, you know what I mean? And they're being able to live off of what they're making from their contract, and they're getting paid decently, but will be the first to go if a company needs to sign a big deal.
Right.
So like if Innova's looking at it and is like, you know what, this agent's right, we're going to lose Rick if we can't sign him to a 5-year, $5 million deal.
Right.
And we need to trim the fat. We need to figure out where can we let some people go to make the cap space for this, essentially.
Well, it was almost like backwards thinking with having like all the small players signed. Like really, disc golf manufacturers need to have a couple big players signed.
Yeah, if you, Paul and Paige, I would guarantee you, I do not know this for a fact, so do not take this as a fact, but I'm very confident in saying this, that I would bet Paul and Paige move plastic, just those two, probably move more plastic than the rest of the Tour Series, Elite Series, whatever they call them, team, that top team combined. Probably. I bet Paul and Paige move
easily. I think.
Probably way more plastic than those two combined.
When you consider the PM line, it's just not even close. But
and so I think if you, realistically, I'm not advising they do this, but if Discraft basically just shifted more production time and more focus to Paul and Paige and got rid of the rest of their team, I would bet you they'd make the same amount or more money with just two top players.
I mean, there's a, and I know there's a lot of like loyalty in that.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen, but I do think like,
and I don't think that's a good idea for the record. I'm not saying cut the Yuli, Ezra, all them of the world. I think that's great additions to the team. I'm just saying strictly numbers wise.
Yeah.
These are the things that companies are going to realize.
I do think like once companies do get massive, they will be able to afford having larger teams and like lower level guys. But I think right now everybody needs to prioritize the biggest names in the sport.
Yeah.
Just how it is.
Yeah. And then that'll also, the lower part of the field become the biggest name in the sport, or you're not going to get that payday. I mean, that's how it is in every other sport.
It's just, it's just going to be cutthroat.
Yeah. Now moving on to FPO, we also saw a pretty tight battle there, but not the tight battle that we're used to seeing. We're used to seeing Paige and Kat. Mm-hmm. Paige, not at this tournament. We saw Katrina Allen and Heather Young. They were actually tied at 6 down going into hole 18. Heather Young had an early release that left her, she actually hit a tree and got a really unfortunate roll way back down the fairway. Led to a 4 on the hole where Kat took a 3 and ended up winning by one stroke. Very impressive final round by Heather Young. She shot a 5 down final round. She was actually at 6 down for the final round, which is the winning score. She came into the round even, shot 6 down, but then bogeyed the final hole to be 5 down.
Yeah.
So she finished one stroke behind Kat, but one thing to note about Katrina Allen's performance this weekend is her putting stats for the whole tournament were actually noticeably better than we've seen recently. She hit a little bit over 70% of her Circle 1X putting. And I think, you know, when she is putting well, we'll be able to see her pull more and more wins. I've actually heard some people commenting on our podcast and stuff like that saying, like, Kat's putting is not enough to make up different strokes. Like, Kat's putting isn't what's really holding her back when it's all said and done.
It is.
It is. And I think this tournament statistically kind of shows that. So if you look at her three rounds, okay, fairway hits across all three rounds, it was within like 5 percentage points, basically the same, like one throw different. Circle two and regulation, so giving herself chances for birdies within circle two, pretty much the exact same across all three rounds. But then you go to putting in circle 1X, across all three rounds. Round one, 69%.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit lower. Round two, 90%.
Right.
That's like the top of the field for FPL.
Is that the round she popped off?
That's the round she popped off.
Yeah.
Round three, 64%.
Yeah.
What are these scores? What does that correlate to? So remember, most of the stats are very, very similar, except for Circle 1X. Round one, 66, what she shot.
Yeah.
Round two, 54. Round three, 63.
Right.
So that just, to me, looking at the stats and looking down, like, it's not like she was throwing the disc that much better.
Right.
It's not like she was doing anything that much better. Mm. But hitting her putts literally is a difference of like 9 to 10 strokes those rounds.
That's the game of golf, really.
It's also a mental thing, because it's not like she missed 9 extra putts within the circle, but making so those putts, the 90%, gave her that confidence to where right now she's probably in her head thinking, I've got to be within 5 feet or I might not make it. Right. When she's hitting 90% of her putts, stress-free upshots.
Yeah, you feel like you get to 50 feet and you're like, I got a chance at that. I mean, that's the game of golf. Like, your goal is to give yourself birdie putts, and then like it's up to you to cash in on them or not, or you're just not going to score.
Yeah.
Like, because you can't expect yourself to throw it under the pole. So you got to make putts to score. That's golf. So, and I think Kat usually throws the disc well. So yeah, it is her putting.
Well, I think if Kat figures out her putting, if she can get to where deadly. That second round, that 90% putting, I think we're back to her and Paige week in, week out.
Yeah.
I think that she throws the disc good enough to be competitive with Paige. It's just her putting is holding her back.
I wonder if she's ever, I mean, I'm sure she has, but I'd like to see her try out a spin putt, just because, I mean, obviously Paige is dominant with it. We've seen Kona Panis switch to a spin putt, a very severe, like, anti-spin putt. You don't have to go that far, but it's worked a lot better for her. I think it gets to a point, like, the whole idea with push putting is you're eliminating like the large misses left and right. And the long comebackers. But it gets to a point where if you're going to be missing a certain amount of putts, like I think spin putting, it's kind of a commit thing. But like, I don't know. I've seen it work for some players to switching to that. So I'd be curious to know if that was.
She has a little bit of a spin putt, but it's not. You're right. It's not like
I think she typically has a lot of up and down elevator movement on her putt.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't have a lot of rotation, and therefore a lot of times I think she has to get a ton of height of it on it to get it in the basket. Whenever you're dealing with a super like high elevator putt, if the disc is coming down super hard at the basket, you're reducing the amount of chains you're working with. You're now looking at a lot less chains when you're going straight at it. You obviously have the whole amount of the basket. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure she's considered, and it gets to a point where you're this far into touring and you're like, you know, I got to just work with what I got. But I don't know. I'd be curious to see if there's a consideration of a putting style change.
I mean, if she doesn't figure something out with her putting, I do think like it's going to be hard to find someone this year, unless some of the European women can come over. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to find someone who regularly competes with Paige.
Yeah.
But if Katrina Allen can figure it out, if she can get that second round, whatever is working for her, to be her normal thing, you know, I think she still has the talent, and she still's got the longevity to be able to compete with Paige for the next few years until some of this younger talent can really kind of flourish. But it was definitely good to see Kat get a win and play decently well overall. It wasn't like an amazing, amazing performance, but it was nothing to scoff at. She played pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, it's time to jump into our fan favorite segment, voted on by me. I always say fan favorite, but like I think you guys enjoy it. Trevor's Trivia, what do you got for me today?
So we got a kind of a new game today. Not really a game. It's just straight up trivia kind of, but we're going to be playing for points. So it's going to be you versus the listeners here. We're going to be looking at some of the oldest PDGA approved discs for each manufacturer. So basically
the listeners are going to destroy me.
I'm going to go through a list of manufacturers, only really the very relevant ones.
Okay.
And you're going to guess the name of their oldest PDGA approved disc. And for a bonus point, the year that it was approved. So you get a maximum of 2 points per question.
I feel like this is probably going to be pretty embarrassing for me.
You will get some of them. I believe.
You don't know me.
I think you'll get some of them.
Because I'm going to psych myself out. But
don't psych yourself
out.
I'm ready. All right. So we're going to start with some of the really old stuff, and then it'll probably get easier. So we're going to start with DGA, the original.
It's got to be a putter. Is it the Steady?
No. What? Do you not know what the first disc golf disc is?
No. Do you know what the first disc golf disc is, Connor? Yeah, see?
The Midnight Flyer? You never heard of that?
I thought that was Lightning.
No. The Midnight Flyer.
It's like a 001 on it.
The Midnight Flyer was like, I'm pretty sure this is it, but like, I think it's the very first one.
Connor's going to Google that.
I mean, I know when it was approved, so I can tell you with confidence it was their first, like, this was it now, because there was like.
But did that turn into the Steady?
On the Steady, I feel like, is a relatively new disc. Like, that's a pretty modern looking putter.
I was just
thinking
Steady Ed is the founding father of disc golf. There are on the first disc.
It's important for me to mention there are discs on the PDGA approved list that are like Ultrastar, like Frisbee type discs. Those are not being mentioned here. Because, like, for Discraft, like, the answer is not the Ultrastar, even though that was approved before any had any discs.
Yeah.
The Midnight Flyer, I believe, though it might not have been DGA's first approved Frisbee, I think it was their first disc, because I think it was the first one they injected the glow stuff into it, make it heavier, and I think it also had a beveled edge to it.
Interesting.
It might not have had a beveled edge. I don't remember, but it was definitely made for disc golf.
Yeah, I had no idea.
All right, anyways, we'll go on to what a lot of people consider one of the first like disc golf beveled edge discs. And so this would be from Innova.
Yeah, I was scared of this one. Because I know there's a bunch of old discs.
There's really only two that came out like kind of back to back.
One of the oldest ones, Eagle. I don't think that's it. Okay. I'm going to go with the AVR first.
Oh, did I flip them? That's brutal. The Eagle is first.
Okay.
And the Eagle is not the Eagle we know today.
No.
But the Arrow came before the AVR as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either. I don't know much about disc golf history.
This guy.
With discs.
Well, and I knew the Midnight Flyer was 1978. The Eagle is 1983.
I knew the Eagle was like one of the oldest discs. Like if you would have said Innova, first disc ever made, like before DGA, and you said the oldest disc golf disc, I would have said Eagle. But once you threw me DGA, I'm thinking Shasta Chris is on a hurricane in the 70s somehow. Like what happened?
Yeah. Well, in any case, all right, next there's someone here you surely are going to get, but I thought you were going to know that one.
I'm not.
All right, well, next we have Discraft next.
Yeah, like I'm going to be, Discraft's oldest stuff?
You're not going to know this.
No, not a chance. I'm going to go with like the...
Do you even know like what their newest one, their oldest one that they still have in production is? Could you guess that at least? We've talked about this before, I think, on Trivia.
The oldest one that's still in production?
Yeah. So I know that as well.
Oh, aren't you cool?
Well, because I looked it up today.
I have no idea. I'm going to say, like, their oldest disc ever. You told me it's not in production, so that just kind of screws with me. Because, like, what the heck's that going to be? It could be anything. What about the Hawk?
No. It's the Phantom. Yeah. 1983. No. They came out with a bunch of versions of the Phantom.
Well, what's the oldest one that's still in production?
The Magnet.
Oh, okay. Why am I even saying okay? I had no idea. That's not even.
All right, now we're going to get into some.
Let's not even pretend.
We're going to get on some of the easier ones.
Did you find
something
about the Midnight Flyer, Connor?
I'm trying to find first disc golf disc ever made.
Oh, okay.
Well, that I'm not looking for first disc golf disc. I'm
well, you
first,
did pitch me as that's the first disc golf disc ever
first
made.
First PDGA approved.
But you said, do you not know the first disc golf disc ever made?
That's what I've always heard is like the disc golf disc. Now, the beveled edge thing I've heard is the Eagle. I think Innova was the first one to do that. But Midnight Flyers, it's the one they have in the Hall of Fame, I'm pretty sure, as like the disc.
I think you're right. I think it has a 0-1 on it.
I think you're right.
Reason. But that's why when I saw the numbers, like, you could have told me that was a
They made a
disc.
Bunch of different versions of the Midnight Flyer that got PDGA approved. But whatever. All right. Next one.
I'm so
Disc Mania. Now we're getting into modern stuff.
I mean, but what was their first mold? I believe it's like an FD probably.
July 1978, the Midnight Flyer came out as the first disc produced explicitly for disc.
Thank you.
What is the Steady based on that?
The Steady, no, I think the Midnight Flyer wasn't even beveled edge.
I have half a point.
The Steady is like a modern putter.
I just thought, you know, you're going to, like, the Steady Ed is named after Ed Hedrick, who, like, founded disc golf. So in my head, I was just like, probably just turned that disc in, like, the first disc ever into the Steady.
You're wrong on the Disc Mania. It's MD1, and it was 2006.
One of their worst.
All right,
Did they even make the MD1 anymore? Isn't it just the MD?
Yeah, I think you're right. But it was called the MD1 when it was produced.
Yeah, like how on earth would I know that?
All right, well, this one you're going to get because there's literally, there's a few like this, but there's
EV7, Penrose.
There is four possible answers for this one. It's Dynamic Discs. They had four discs all on the same day.
Judge.
That's one of them.
Warden.
No, but the judge, that's fine. What year was it?
EMAC Truth.
None
Evader.
Of those. No. No.
Judge. Judge was in 2000 and... When did EMAC leave? No, it might have been while he was still with Discraft. 2010.
No. He won a world championship in 2010.
No.
It's 2012. And they came out with the Escape, the Fugitive, the Trespass, and the Judge.
Escape's that old.
You have 1 point now.
Hey!
Next one is Latitude 64. They had three molds, and you're not getting probably any of them. Only like one of the molds, they came out with two versions of that same mold. So I'll give you 2 points if you get it. And it is a popular mold of theirs.
Of Latitudes?
Yeah, I'll even give you more hints. It's a putter, but it's not really, okay. That's all I'm going to say. It's a putter.
So it's a harp.
No.
That's not even Latitude. That's West Side. Don't strike me for that.
That's ruthless.
Pure.
No. Good guess. It's a Cenis. They came out with the...
I almost said Cenis. That was the first that came to my mind, but for some reason I didn't say it.
They came out with the Medius, the Cenis AP, and the Cenis SP in 2006.
What's the Medius?
I don't even know.
They still make it?
I don't know. I think I've heard of it.
Never heard of that.
I feel like I have. All right, next we
I'm
have,
awful at this next game. We this have, might as well just be Trevor reading a list.
There's four more. We have...
Oh, my God.
Well, you got to remember, the viewers are kicking your butt right now. They're involved. Yeah. This isn't just you.
Yeah.
Next, we have Legacy.
Their first is?
Yeah.
The Ghost.
No. The Rampage in 2011.
That's their first is? Yeah. What an entrance.
Yeah. I was going to say, when I read that, they're like...
Disc golf market, we're here, 1:14 speed.
That's... Hey, you know what? It gets people talking about it, because back then, 14 speeds weren't
that
really a thing.
That is true.
All right, then we have MVP.
Their first?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why I keep saying their first. Like, that's the point of the game,
Hunter.
Yeah,
that's the game.
Yeah, you're still playing. The Volt.
The Volt, man? No, it's the Ion. 2009.
Don't the Volt man me like I was supposed to know that.
I'm not even going to give you the West Side one because you're not even going to have a chance. So this is the last one you
get.
The
West Side's the king.
No, it's the Northman.
Like, I actually heard of that.
Okay.
I think Jimmy's.
Well, here, last one is Prodigy. They came out with four molds. Please get one of them.
M4.
Nope.
M1?
No.
PA3?
No.
PA1?
No, you missed all
of them.
D1. Oh, yeah. Thank you. It came out with the D1 through D4, like D1, D2,
D3,
D4.
Why would you drop just drivers if you're coming out?
Because that's what the people are here for.
But why would you,
exciting.
Like, no. If I'm coming out with a disc golf company, I'm doing
stink,
a putter,
dude.
Mid, fairway driver.
Everyone's why I ask you a question about, like, past disc golf stuff, and you know
if
it.
If it's player
it's
stuff, I'll know. But disc manufacturers, I did not care until February 22nd, 2019, when FoundationDiscs.com launched.
Man, I mean, I...
Prior to that, I'm useless.
Well, somebody at least drop a comment on how many points you could get out of that, because Hunter got one.
If you quizzed me on, like, flight numbers of, like, modern discs or, like, plastics of modern discs or something like that...
That's what I'm saying. I don't know what parts... It's like your brain...
I would know that.
Your disc golf brain is either, like, you know everything or nothing. There's no in between.
Well, because
so it's impossible to pick questions.
So it's stuff that I need. Like, if I had to answer a lot of customer service questions about flight numbers, I know it.
Yeah.
If I had to suggest how a disc flew... I know it.
You brush
like
up on
power,
your history.
Like,
somebody needs to make a disc golf history book.
When is someone ever
book.
Emailing me saying, hey, do you happen to know the first disc golf disc? So information I hear goes in my
I was
out
just thinking
other.
Like educated guesses, like MVP, like I would have thought
would
of the Ion right away because that's the first, because I remember when MVP came out.
See, you started playing disc golf way before me. When I started playing disc golf, MVP had been out.
What can I say, man?
So I just went with the one that like seems like a good first mold, which was the Volt. Like, that'd be a solid way to burst. Maybe if the Volt... No, I can't say that.
What do you got to say, Connor? You're on the edge of your seat over there.
What's the relationship between Waymo and DGA?
I think Waymo used to own DGA and then got rid of them.
Interesting. Who bought it from them?
I think Ed Hedrick, like, took it on
he
by
stole
himself.
Yeah, he snuck in at midnight?
I think it was, like, Waymo-sponsored thing, and then it became fully DGA.
Yeah, I think they kind of dropped the whole disc golf ball. Like, they just, like, kind of gave up on Frisbee-based competitions a little bit.
But they did later create a series of Midnight Flyer discs, and the Steady was one of those.
Oh, boy.
The Steady we know today?
Does not matter.
When was that? When was that, though? How late? How long?
If I would have had that momentum, I would have killed this game.
I want to know when the Steady, the current modern version of the Steady, came out.
Well, there's also the Steady beadless. You can't go with modern version.
Yes, I want the modern version. Like the AVR, the same one that we have today, came out in 84.
But you don't know if it's the exact same. The Destroyer's not the exact same. The Judge isn't the exact same.
Well, yes,
so
it is.
It was like the Midnight Flyer is basically just like a stamp and then a certain plastic. It was a glow plastic. I don't know when it came out, though, but they did like... It was number 4 of that series, so they did a few discs in the Midnight.
And number 4 was Steady.
Yeah.
We'll never know. Somebody will look it up. I mean, it's on the PDGA-approved disc.
So I got a point and a half.
If that makes you happy, like, I don't care. You got blown out by everybody because they know that the Eagle came out first.
I said Eagle. No, I said, I think it's the Eagle, but, you know, maybe it's the AVR. But at least that one I was close.
Yeah, I guess. At least you had an intelligent thought.
I mean, Prodigy, what are they doing releasing to D4? as part of their like flagship for like if someone is the first disc someone bought from Prodigy was a D4.
I guess drivers were all the rage like putters are now. Like Hydrogen Loft, I'll take 50. Like they made a quarter of $1 billion off their Kickstarter because they made a zero speed putter. Like,
yeah. I can't wait till I make a 17 speed putter.
Yeah. Like if it was that simple, man, dang it.
All right, we're going to take a look at Texas States. It's coming up this weekend. The tournament starts Friday.
Heck yeah. Yeah,
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be live, broadcasted live all weekend on the Disc Golf Network. You should definitely check it out. Should be a pretty fun tournament to watch. Although there has been some pros throwing a little shade at the course.
Yeah.
Most notably on Instagram, Mr. Ezra Aderholt himself.
That dirty dog.
He posted a picture of him smiling and then a picture of him like concerned, and it said, hole one at Dogwood, which is the course for Texas State, versus all the other holes at Dogwood.
I'm curious to watch it.
I'm very curious to see the course. But I actually don't have a lot about this event or like talking points, so we're just going to go straight into predictions because I want to get to, before we wrap up the show, I want to get into this final little segment here.
Okay.
So just really quick, top three, MPO, who are you thinking?
We're going a guy with a lot of good history in Texas States, and that's Ricky Wysocki. Also happens to be the hot player right now, so it really worked out for me. I'm going to go with Calvin Heimberg in second, only because Paul is in third, and he's going to play aggressive trying to catch Ricky at the end, and Calvin's going to come off a chase card and pass him. It's going to happen exactly like that, so you guys can like bring this footage back when it does.
So I'm thinking we're going to see a classic Paul-Ricky battle.
Classic.
Back to back. This is going to be another classic.
Classic.
And I think Paul's going to walk away victorious in this one.
At Texas States, man. Does he?
I don't actually know. I think Ricky's going to be in second.
Does he win that event?
But holy cow. Yawn.
Get a grip.
I'm sneaking.
Locked.
I'm sneaking. All right. I'm sneaking a sneaky sneak pick. Up into my picks. My third.
I was going to do the view.
My third pick. And for no reason other than he's the first name I saw when I pulled up. When I pulled out the PDGA, my
Eagle
eyes just got...
Eagle Wynn McMahon.
No, my eyes just got drawn down to Mr. Paul Ulibarri.
Dude. So
he's coming in third.
He's back.
Guess who's back? Back again.
If he grows out that dirty stash again, he will not be touchable. Do you remember? Do you remember that?
that can be taken so many ways.
Next subject.
What about your FPO predictions? What are your top three...
FPO is honestly a toss-up because all my confidence was in Paige Pierce, and then the last event she played in, right, was the last one she played in. She stunk, yeah. And that kind of like ruined everything for me, so I'm not going to pick her. I'm going to be a rebel. I'm going to pick, I had Val Mandhano in third. I don't know, home course advantage.
I've been saying that for 3 weeks.
I'm trying to switch things up every once in a while because the FPO field, honestly, has been very interesting because it just keeps changing. And then second, I'm going to go with Kona Panis. First, Katrina Allen.
Nice. So I'm going first place, Paige Pierce.
Boring.
I believe in Paige. Second place, I'm going with last year's winner of Texas States for FPO. Valerie Mandahano.
I was going to say, you're going to like make me guess that?
I was going to see if you knew it. But yeah, no, Valerie Mandahano, I'm putting in second. Sarah Hokum won 2 years ago with a pretty stacked field, but I'm not putting her in my top three.
Nobody was at Texas States last year, though, weren't
they? That's irrelevant. So Katrina Allen third. It wasn't a good field.
I was going to say, who was there?
But she shot decent.
Hey, that's why she's my third place pick.
Yeah, so she's my second place pick. That. And then Katrina Allen, third place. So this final segment... We're going to use this to wrap up the show. The make that call this week kind of sucks. So
good. Don't waste my time.
I'm not going to waste your time because I wrote it and I was kind of...
He's getting ready to change the slide and just crush his dreams.
I was reading over it even as I was leading there and I was like...
It's stupid.
This is so dumb. Everyone knows the answer to this.
Like you take two steps back and you mark your line. That's how it works.
No, but I'm going to put you in a scenario though still.
Heck
we're
yeah.
not for making
at least I don't miss out on that.
But you're still in this scenario. All right. You just started a disc golf brand.
Okay.
Trevor's. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead. I already know the first answer here. So we're removing Paul and Paige from this question.
Okay.
Paul and Paige do not exist in the still exist. They're just with a different brand. But you started a new disc golf company.
Yes.
Manufacturer. You have an unlimited amount of money.
Oh, to sign whoever I want?
On one MPO and one FPO player that will build your brand. That's the only, you're going to be able to tie to them, and you're going to have to, they're the only people you can use to build your brand ever.
Yes.
So, you can't use Paul or Paige. What is your MPO and which is your FPO player?
Fascinating question. Well, here's the thing. So, you got to consider marketability, but you also have to consider risk here, because like I have to pick somebody who's semi low risk because that's all I get. So I'm going to weigh skill over marketability, because at the very least I need somebody that I know is going to be around for the next 10 years. So I think that makes the FPO answer pretty obvious. Well, it really brings it down to two people, Calvin or
you mean
Eagle.
MPO,
right?
When you said FPO is pretty obvious, I was like, that
right.
was the one
no,
I just
FPO is not
time.
Obvious. MPO is pretty obviously between Calvin and Eagle, because they're the youngest and most talented out of those young guns. And Eagle has a slight edge on marketability and I'd argue talent. I'm going to go Eagle, MPO, but I think you could probably go Calvin too. It's probably a toss up, but I think Eagle's a little more marketable. So I go Eagle, MPO, dropping them. I'd sign him 5 years, 20 mil, guaranteed with incentives.
How old is Eagle? I'm going to look that up really quick.
I think he's 22. No, 23. He's a year older than me. He's got 10 years in his prime for sure. He may be 2 years older than me. He's probably 24. Anyways.
He's 23.
All right, let's go. And FPO, a bit tougher. You know, you've got some options. You got your Haley King. You've got your Val Manuhano. You have the Finnish players. Your Henna Bloombergs and have you. Man. You said I can't go with Paige, but I still could go with Kat if I wanted to. That is a tricky one.
You're making me rethink everything. But keep going. Because I'm also, I refuse to sign the same people you sign.
I have to change my answer
on one of them.
Yeah, well, you can say which one because I only answered one, but... Dang, man. FPO is tough. Oh, no, it's not. No, it's not. It's Kona Panis.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Dang it.
It's Kona Panis. I don't
literally.
Know. Yeah.
First off, if you Google Kona Panis' age, says she's 17.
No, she's not that
she's
young.
She's definitely not.
She's like a year older than me, too. She's
so
like
that was in
same
2016.
Age.
She was 17, so she's 23.
Yeah, she's like same age as Eagle.
22.
And
just look at the year she was born.
Yeah, I think.
This is why we have.
Oh my gosh!
I just searched Kona Panis.
Kona is getting better talent wise. I think she's going to be around talent wise, and she's super marketable. So that's actually the easier. That's easier than the MPO is. That's a no brainer. It's Kona
Panis.
Yeah,
I thought Kona was pretty obvious, but I'm not going to have the same people as you. I refuse.
Okay.
Because I don't want this to be a boring segment. So I'm actually going Ricky. Ricky's a little bit of a risk because of longevity.
Was he like 27?
He's 27.
That's actually a good play.
You got about 10 to 13 years of his rest of his career. And if he's like my only focus and I can market him however I want.
Yeah.
I'm signing him to a, you know, 13 year, 7,500 million.
You make him an overstable putter. You make him an overstable putter and you're selling him like hotcakes.
That's what I'm saying. I'm using,
you
I'm
heard
marketing
the pig? Well,
him
here's the boar.
Like crazy. and then on FPO side, I'm not going Cat only because...
She's in her 30s, isn't
it's
she?
It's tough. Well, I don't even know her age. I was just thinking performance-wise.
But you got to think, you got to make a safe play.
But that's where I'm going overseas.
Yeah.
To
good play.
It's between Evelina and Henna. And I think I'm going Evelina because I think she's a little more comfortable in front of the camera. And I think I'm doing the same thing with her that I'm doing. I'm basically doing the same thing with her that I would do with Rick. And I'm like hiring I have unlimited money in this scenario.
Heck yeah.
I'm hiring a full-time camera crew that's going to live with them and drive them all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they're each going to have their own RV.
My guys have jets. My guy and girl.
Dang it, I forgot about
jets.
No, RV's more.
We have
spaceships. My guys will fly in jets to meet the RV road crew.
RVs.
Ricky's never in the RV, but you still get the marketability of Rick. Being on the side
Eagle's
of
feet don't even touch the ground if he's not on the course. I promise you that. they're going to carry him on one of those like big like throne things.
Okay, but realistically, if I had like a reasonable amount of money to hire to like not
what do we determine as reasonable,
Bezos?
Hunter? Didn't we talk about that last podcast?
Not Jeff Bezos money, but like if I was like actual disc golf money, I realistically, if I had a player like Ricky, I'm paying someone $30,000 to $40,000 a year to follow them with a camera year round. and just crank out content.
You make the money back.
Yeah, I'll easily make that money back.
Yeah.
No doubt. I'm doing that for Evelina too. I'm just that person. And guess what? They're also their driver.
Brand to the moon.
So that's super easy. I mean, you heard it there. There's Foundation's five-year business plan. That's a fun
scenario. I want people to put in the comments or just let us know on whatever platform, like who you're signing and what deal you're giving them and why.
Okay, no, but real talk.
That's fun.
What deal are you giving? Because we obviously made jokes about how much money we're paying someone. If you were a disc golf company with actually having to figure out mm-hmm. what deal are you giving Eagle and what deal are you giving Kona.
I mean, that's all. It depends on too many factors because Eagle. I won't throw out actual numbers, but I will say that I can give each of them confidently. If I have the kind of resources to do what like Discraft's doing with Paul, like create their own line of discs and that kind of thing, I can confidently give each of them whatever the highest contract in each of their fields, FPO, MPO is. I'll say that. Like, I'd be comfortable giving them.
What was Paige's details? Did Paige ever release your details?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying, though. I'd be comfortable giving them whatever the biggest contract. So
basically, you're going Discraft model where you go royalty heavy because you know they've always can change yeah. royalties.
I think
there's
both,
no real cap.
Yeah, I think both those players, I can make the money back on moving discs. I can do it.
Yeah, I'm probably negotiating with them, figuring out. My contract would honestly, there'd be a guarantee, whatever the player wanted, up to $1 million because you could do it if you were a manufacturer. But my biggest thing is I would be negotiating on the social media, split revenue social media, and split revenue with the disc, making them align. Because realistically, like, if you want $100,000 a year guaranteed and then a much higher percentage of social media and discs, or you want $1 million a year guaranteed and a much lower percentage, it's all going to balance out. You're going to make the same amount of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just think, you see it in some in other sports, but you see it a lot in like entrepreneurs where they literally hire a cameraman to follow them 24/7, like Gary Vee. That's literally the only reason you know Gary Vee's name is because he did that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who in these comments, who or if you're listening, which one of us would not want to see a like basically consistent vlog of Ricky or Paul or anyone on the road?
And you know what?
That's really well produced, well edited, and it's like a weekly video.
Sometimes that stuff comes out down the road. That whole Michael Jordan documentary that popped off on Netflix, like that stuff was filmed forever ago, but because they literally had camera people everywhere.
Yeah, but I've been to tournaments. There's not the camera people are
this,
all aside.
We got to film this stuff, man. We're going to forget the history of our sport.
I mean, it's being filmed, but it's not
behind the scenes.
Like the McBeast Diaries was cool.
That was fun,
but it wasn't as consistent.
No.
I'm saying, like, this person is traveling with this person, with these people, all day, every day, with a camera.
I mean, yeah.
And just, you know, just let the camera roll, see what we catch. See what we can get.
Yep.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Hopefully you've enjoyed this show. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. If you're listening on YouTube or Spotify or anywhere like that, be sure to leave a comment or DM us with some feedback. We always take that to heart and try to improve the show. We should have, let me just give you a little podcast insight. With the amount of discs that we just got in from multiple to different brands, we officially have more discs waiting to get on the site than we have on the site right now. So
yeah,
do with that information what you will, but there is a lot of discs about to be hitting the site over the next week or so. So if you're looking for specific molds from your favorite brands, there's a chance that we have them, and there's a chance that they're about to be on the site. But I'll leave you with that. Other than that, we will talk to you guys next week.